This is Rabbi Jeff Sachs of Web Yeshiva and Atid with the first in our installment of Shiurim on the Rambam's Shmona Prakim. Here he is, the Rambam, or some, I don't know, Persian sheik, disguised as the Rambam, but this picture, which actually once even graced the one shekel note in the days when Israel had one shekel notes, is the traditional portrait of the Rambam. But I think that we can be fairly confident that this is not actually the Rambam. We don't actually have a portrait of the Rambam. Somebody once pointed out to me that this picture has different. There are different editions of this same picture. Some where the Rambam has payas, some where he doesn't have payas. In all cases, we're pretty sure this is not the Rambam, but this is the picture that we ascribe to the Rambam. The Rambam, of course, is Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, also known as Maimonides. I'm sure this is all by way of background for most of us, particularly those of you that have been studying the thought of the Rambam with us here already for a few semesters. He lives from 1135 to 1205. Or as a student, when I once taught high school in America, a student of mine once said, "Only a half an hour?" The Rambam, of course, is the giant of Jewish thought. He's the first and last and everything in between. No one can seriously have an encounter with Jewish philosophy, Machshevet Yisrael, Jewish thought, whatever you call it, without seriously grappling with the Rambam. And that's true whether you're studying the Rambam directly, studying any other medieval Jewish philosopher, or even studying modern Jewish philosophy. There is just no way not to have a serious encounter with the Rambam, with Maimonides. I'll give you just very, very briefly, we've done this a number of times in the past, I'll give you just very briefly the highlights of the Rambam's biography as it relates to what we're talking about. Hold on one second, let me just look here. If you have a webcam, please turn on your webcam so that we can see you. The Rambam is born in Spain around the age of Bar Mitzvah due to the advances of the Almohad invasion. Remember, throughout much of the Middle Ages, up until 1492, that significant date for many different reasons, until 1492, the Spain is undergoing, the line of scrimmage is moving north and south between Christian Spain in the north and Muslim Spain in the south. I think there's a conversation going on in the chat, a private conversation where part of it is taking place for all participants. I'm not sure. You know, on the chat you can talk one-on-one with someone. You can have a private, you know, like we used in school, pass notes, and I'll never know about it, which is fine with me. Or you can chat to everyone. Just be careful who you're sending your chats to if you want them to be private. The tension between Muslim and Christian control of Spain, of the Iberian Peninsula, plays out as the Jews are sometimes caught in the middle until 1492, when the Christians finally reconquer the Spanish Peninsula in what was called the Reconquista, the reconquering of Spain. 1492, of course, is significant. We're jumping ahead. This postdates the Rambam, but 1492 is a period where the Spanish crown says, "Well, if we finally banished the Muslim infidels from our land, well, what about the infidels at home? What about these Jews that are right underneath our thumb? What are we going to do with them?" And of course, we know what happens in 1492. Beyond Columbus sailing the ocean blue. But around the time of his bar mitzvah, the Almohad invasion sweeps through the Rambam's hometown, and his family flees. There's a period of time we're not exactly sure where they were, but apparently they were traveling throughout through North Africa, and at a certain point they end up in Egypt, in Cairo, essentially, where the Rambam makes his life and his career, his fabled career as a physician, as a communal leader, as a dayan, as a rabbi, as a teacher, as an author, as a posek, as a philosopher, as a scientist, etc., 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 leader of the Jewish community, and he lives there throughout the rest of his life, always, of course, longing for Eretz Yisrael, bemoaning every day that he spends in the galut, but apparently never really making it here. He is, of course, buried someplace in Israel, and according to tradition, his burial site is in Tiberia, in Tiberias in the north. Around the age of 30, the Rambam completes his first major work, and that is a comprehensive commentary on the Mishnah, the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayot. It's interesting, of course, the Mishnah had been written in around the year 200, and it takes almost 1,000 years for someone to write a full commentary on the Mishnah. Now, of course, the Talmud itself, the Gemara, is a commentary on the Mishnah, but it's not a commentary on the Mishnah per se. The Talmud, the Gemara, uses the Mishnah as a springboard for a freewheeling conversation. But the Gemara is not commenting line by line, word by word on the Mishnah. And the first person that does that is the Rambam. This Perush HaMishnah, commentary on the Mishnah, is his first important work, and he completes it around the age of 30, which is remarkable. Of course, his two other major works are the Mishnah Torah, his great encyclopedia of halacha, the Yad HaChazaka, and later, towards the end of his life, his Moreh Nevuchim, his Guide to the Perplexed. Perhaps we'll have occasion to encounter both of them as we move along during the semester. In the Perush HaMishnah, the commentary on the Mishnah, which reads like a commentary on the Mishnah that you might be familiar with, each Mishnah has a short commentary, often not more than a paragraph. But in this commentary on the Mishnah, which incidentally is not written in Hebrew, besides the Mishnah Torah, which is written in Hebrew, all of the Rambam's writing is done in Arabic or in Judeo-Arabic, which is the lingua franca of the Jews of his region and his time. And then even in his lifetime, it was translated into Hebrew, and it's been translated a number of times into Hebrew, modern Hebrew, updated Hebrew, since the original composition. In the Rambam's Perush HaMishnah, there are three significant excurses. There are three significant essays that the Rambam includes in the commentary. Okay, Eliyahu, that's fine. You can either ask questions now or at the end I'll stay on. I'm happy to answer as many questions as you have. The Rambam has three, he makes these springboard jumps, and he has these three essentially standalone essays that are incorporated into the Perush HaMishnah, but are very, very significant philosophical texts. This is the third of the three that we are looking at. In the past number of semesters, we spent some time looking at the Hakdama, the Perush HaMishnah. By way of introduction to the entire Mishnah work, he wrote an introduction to the Mishnah commentary, which, among other things, is an analysis of the history, scope, and methodology of Torah Sheba'al Peh, of the oral law. And that's what we discussed last semester, I think for 2 semesters. The other major side point is in Masechet Sanhedrin, which contains a chapter called Perek Chelek, a Mishnah that begins, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba, all of Israel has a share in the world to come. The Rambam has this lengthy philosophical aside where he talks about who gets into Olam Haba, who gets into the world to come, and who doesn't merit to enter Olam Haba, based upon philosophical considerations and matters of belief. And that's where the Rambam enumerates his famous 13 principles of faith, what we call the Animamins, the Anima Amin, the list of the 13 cardinal principles of faith of the Jewish people. That's in that section. In our section, in the section that we'll be looking at over the next number of weeks, a work called the Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters, although he himself didn't title it that. That was a title that was ascribed to it subsequently. In Masechet Avot, in Pirkei Avot, the sayings of the fathers, the chapters of the fathers, the Mishnah volume, the Mishnah tractate that kind of doesn't is sui generis. It has a very unique personality as far as the Mishnah goes. Is there anybody that could kind of give a brief introduction, a brief summary of what Pirkei Avot deals with? Who would be willing to give us that little description? Let's turn on Joel. Are you up to speaking on the microphone? Joel, you with us? Okay. So originally, Rafi mentions that Pirkei Avot might have been for judges. Yes and no. The Rambam does say something like that. We studied that together. Eliyahu, I like that. Psychoethics. Psychological, philosophical, ethical work. Dealing with proper behavior and proper, what we tend to call midot, personality traits. Now, the Rambam says the reason that Masechet Avot is included in Seder Nezikin, which deals with property laws and financial matters, the Bava Kama, Bava Basra, Bava Metzia, Masechet Sanhedrin, is that judges in particular have to ascribe to a very high ethical standard, and therefore these ethical teachings are there. But it's not only for judges; it's for everyone, of course. So, since Masechet Avot deals with the development of one's personality, and the proper traits one should have, and the proper ethics one should have, and the way one should lead his or her life, the Rambam makes this. This discursive discussion by way of his introduction to the commentary on Avot called the Shmona Prakim, which is his theory of personality, which is his theory of how to go about working towards human perfection. And that is the essential theme of the Shmona Prakim, although in a bit we'll go through by way of introduction tonight to see what some of the other topics are in these eight chapters. Again, the text of the Shmona Prakim, I'll be providing you with the Hebrew text. It has been translated a couple of times, the Shmona Prakim. It's available, there's this volume here, which is available from the website of Targum.com by Rabbi Yaakov Feldman, the eight chapters of the Rambam, which is a translation and a commentary. I've seen the work. I don't own it. I'm not terribly familiar with it, but the one or two times that I flipped through it, it seemed like a reasonable translation to me. And then, of course, in this volume, if you're going to buy one book of the Rambam, if you, of course, would like to have it in English, this volume, prepared by Rabbi Isidore Twersky, Zichrono Levracha, a Maimonides reader, which you can get probably in any Jewish bookstore that sells English books, and you can buy online from Amazon.com and any other number of places. The Maimonides reader is an anthology of translated Maimonidean texts. Kind of a reader's digest to the Rambam's greatest hits, as it were. It's selections primarily from the Mishneh Torah, not a full translation, of course, in one volume, but you know, like the, I don't want to say the more significant parts, but the if you're going to anthologize a work and you know, selected passages. And then he also has selected chapters from the Guide to the Perplexed, as well as the other philosophical writings. And most of the Shmona Prakim are translated and available in this work. So I've mentioned it a few times. There are different editions of it, meaning there are different covers, but it doesn't matter which edition you get, whether the cover looks like this or looks like something else. They're all off prints of the same volume. So this, if somebody wanted to buy just one book, this would be something worthwhile. There's also the first translation of the Shmona Prakim was done by somebody named Gorfinkel in 1912. It's in the public domain and is available through this URL, this tiny URL that I made, that you can access it as a PDF. It was somebody scanned it and put it up, since it's no longer under copyright. The translation is the work of a century ago, so you know it's not exactly the English that we speak today, but it's certainly manageable. If somebody wants a translation of the Shmona Prakim, you can download it from this site from the 1912 edition. The Hebrew text that we're using is from the translation of just a few years ago by Rav Shilat. From the yeshiva in Male Adumim, has done a lot of work in translating the Rambam into contemporary modern Hebrew. And this is from the edition by Rav Shilat, and again, worth adding to your shelf. Tonight, I just want to look at what's called the Pticha, the introduction to the Shmona Prakim. Meaning, the Shmona Prakim is made up of eight chapters plus an introduction. So tonight, I just want to look at the introduction and then give some general background. There are two major topics that the Rambam deals with by way of introduction. Before we get into that, are there any questions, or is there anybody that has anything they wanted to add or to say? Okay. So the Rambam says, Kvar bi'arnu b'pticha ze hachibur. In the introduction to this work, in the introduction to the Mishnah commentary, which we studied last semester, Ma hasiba asher, this is actually, Rafi, this is what you mentioned. Ma hasiba asher henia hamechaber likboa zot hamasechta bezeh haseder. Why was Masechet Avot, Pirkei Avot, placed where it was? You know, we know that generally speaking, the organization of the Masechtot, of the tractates within the Siddurim, within the orders of the six orders of Mishnah, were done essentially by length. The longer the Masechta, it was put first. We actually had a discussion last semester. It's actually, I think, one of the more interesting discussions we had about the organization of knowledge and how the Masechtot are organized. So even though they're done generally by length, the Rambam, who was certainly aware of that, the Rambam nevertheless thought that we could say something about how the Shas is organized. Um, And the Rambam says, "V'zacharnu gam kein godel hatoelet bezot ha-masechta." So he says, over there, what we discussed last semester, we said that avot is placed where it is, partially because of the particular need, the particular importance of a discussion about ethics in the context of communal leaders, in the context of judges, and also the overall value of the great value of Masechet Avot as a philosophical text, as an ethical text. Rabbi Soloveitchik once said something along the lines of Masechet Avot is different not just in terms of its content, that it's dealing with large ethical questions, questions of personality, questions of philosophy. Not just different in its content, but in its form as well, as opposed to other Masechtot, Masechet Shabbat, for example, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Masechet Sanhedrin, which deals with the nitty-gritty of halacha. And if there's a machloket, there's a need to resolve the machloket. There's a need to reach a normative position to say that this is or is not permitted on Shabbat, that the following act does or does not constitute a punishable offense, and what have you and what not. In Masechet Avot, there's no attempt to reach a resolution. There are different philosophical positions, there are different points of view about values, about worth, about emphases on how we lead our lives, that paint larger pictures and create a multiplicity of voices on some of these issues, not in a free-for-all. It's not a free-for-all. There are obviously certain things which are unacceptable. There are obviously certain things that are antithetical to our values. But within our value system, Judaism can tolerate, these are my words, not Rabbi Soloveitchik's, I'm just trying to convey what I think he was saying. We can tolerate different ways of looking at things within a larger framework of values. And therefore, it could be that this chacham says one thing and that chacham says another, this Tana says one thing and that Tana says another thing about different orientations of ways of looking at things, and that's okay. And people then can have a choice of how to look at things. There's no psak halacha when it comes to some of the matters discussed in Avot, although clearly there are positions which are antithetical to the halacha. But within the halachic framework, there can be multiplicity of views, as opposed to Hilchot Shabbat, where at the end of the day, we need to reach a normative psak, and we have to say, this is the halacha, and the other position is rejected. So that's part of the background to Masechet Avot, on which the Rambam is coming to say what he has to say in this work. Ukfar yadnu pa'amim b'ma shekidam mize ha'chibur, shenidaber bezot ha'masechta b'inyanim mo'ilim, v'she na'arich ba ketzat arichut. So the Rambam says, I'd like to pause here and at some length discuss the value and the benefit of these matters discussed in Masechet Avot. Mipnei shehi af al pi sheteraeh mivoeret kala lahavin. Even though the things discussed in Masechet Avot are, on the surface, easy to understand, like there's this long-standing custom that we have to learn Masechet Avot on Shabbat afternoon, at least from Pesach until Sukkot, when the Shabbat afternoon is a little longer, the half a year where Shabbat afternoon is a little longer. I mean, the stuff that's assigned to reading on Shabbat after the Chulent, it can't be the hardest material. So even though, on the surface, Avot is easy to handle, Hine ha-ma'aseh b'ma'aseh kalul ba eino kal al kol b'nei ha-adam. But it's a little hard to carry out. V'gam lo kol inyaneha muvanim mibli perush maspik. Im heota mevia l'shleimut rabba v'hatzlachat amitit. Because if you really get it, if you really understand avot and are able to implement it, then it leads to shleimut. It leads to perfection. Now, this idea of human perfection is a complicated one. We're going to have to come back to it. Can there be such a thing as human perfection? That's a significant question, a weighty philosophical matter. That's why I wanted to, go into this at some length. Ukvar amru aleihem shalom. Chazal said, "Hai man deboy lemahave chasida lekayim milei deavot." Who would like to be a chassid? This is a gemara in Masechet Bava Kama. Who would like to be a chassid? By chassid, we don't mean chassidim like we think about today. When the Rambam talks about chassidim, he's not talking about Rabbi Nachman and the Baal Shem Tov and the fellows in Mea Sharim, or, you know, choose your Hasidic community. He's talking about, right, that's a movement that begins only in the 18th century. And they adopt the name Hasid, which is a name that, of course, precedes them. But who wants to be righteous? If you want to be righteous, so study Masechet Avot, says the Gemara in Bava Kama. Ve'en etzleinu ma'ale l'ma'ale min ha-chasidut ela ha-nevu'ah. And what's greater than being a Hasid? Being a Navi, being a prophet. What's better than being a righteous person? What's a higher level? Being a prophet. In the past, we've encountered this idea that for the Rambam, nivu'ah, prophecy, is the highest level that a human can achieve. No, there's a discussion about whether a chacham and a chassid, but for the Rambam, a prophet, because you can't be a prophet without having everything else. You can't be a prophet if you're not also righteous, and you can't be a prophet if you're not also wise. It's greater than the sum of the parts. Kemosh amru chassidut mevi'a lidei ruach hakodesh. That chassidut, that righteousness, that is a precursor for receiving Ruach HaKodesh, for receiving prophecy. Hine hitba'er midivrehem sha'amaseh b'musrei zot ha'masechta mevi el ha'nevu'ah b'pnei shehi kolelet chelek gadol mima'alot ha'midot. Since Masechet Avot contains chelek gadol mima'alot ha'midot, since it contains the lion's share of the refined character traits, studying it, by definition, will help you attain those higher levels. And he says, we'll come to this. So that's number one, is a discussion of the value of engaging in Masechet Avot, and why he chooses to place this larger philosophical, ethical discussion of his as a preface to the commentary on Masechet Avot. Now he says something else, a very famous statement of the Rambam. You're likely familiar with this statement of the Rambam, even if you've never studied it. You're likely familiar with it secondhand. It's one of the more well-known statements of the Rambam. He says, Ra'iti lahakdim, kodem shachtil perush halacha halacha. Before I start going, halacha halacha, mishnah by mishnah, before I start the actual heavy lifting of the commentary on Avot, so I wanted to make an introduction, these prakim mo'ilim, these valuable chapters. Yusgu la'adam mehem hakdamot, v'yu lo gam kein kimafteach l'masha anu atidim lifaresh. This is by way of introduction to what I'm going to be saying in the actual commentary on Masechet Avot. V'da ki hadvarim asher Omar utam be'elu haprakim v'ma sheyavo min haperush einam inyanim shechidashtim ani me'atzmi. He says, what I'm about to tell you, both in this work called Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters, as well as in the commentary to Masechet Avot itself, these are not things that I myself innovated. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm anthologizing for you ideas, comments, philosophy, theories of others that have come before me. Now, of course, when the Rambam says that he's not saying anything new, well, yes and no. Even if all he's doing is quoting from others, which is actually not all he's doing, but even if all he's doing is quoting from others, the process of reforming it, repackaging it, reconstituting it in his own words, even though certain large sections of the Shmona Prakim are almost verbatim quotes from other works, but the process of reconstituting it in his own language, the Rambam was, of course, an extraordinarily gifted writer, and he had a way of packaging ideas in a written text that transformed them and placed them into a form that's half of the value of the work. It's not just what he says, but how he says it. V'lo peirushim shebeditem. It's right. So it's not. These are not things that I made up. I'm just conveying to you what others have said. He says, Eilahem inyanim milukatim midivrei chachamim. These are things that I've gathered from the words of the sages, midrashot v'talmud, from the midrash, from the Agadah, from the Talmud. Vizulato hachiburim michiburehem, as well as other works, umidivrei hafilosafim gamkein, and not just from the traditional Jewish canon, but also from works of philosophy. And we know, of course, that the Rambam was deeply rooted in Aristotelian philosophy. The great project that he'll complete. He's writing this, of course, as a young man. I mean, I'm just looking at some of the pictures. I'm guessing most of us are above the age of 30. Besides our good friend Raphael Yehoshaphat, who thankfully pulls down the average age amongst us. But I'm guessing most of us are above the age of 30. I'm guessing. If there's anybody that's below the age of 30, please raise your hand. Rafi, we know that you're... Okay, 28 is closing in on 30 already. The Rambam is writing this. He's finished writing this by the time he's 30. It's unbelievable. The great project of his golden years, the Mor Nevuchim, which he completes nearing the end of his life, is his great attempt to synthesize Aristotelian philosophy and Judaism. Synthesize is a funny word. I mean, there are certain places where Aristotelian philosophy has to be rejected out hand and pushed away with both arms. But the idea that Aristotelian philosophy, look, Aristotelian philosophy, when we say Aristotelian philosophy, we don't mean Aristotelian philosophy. We mean a school of thought that developed. Aristotle lived in the 4th century BCE. The Rambam lived in the 12th century CE. That's a lot of time. That's over 1,000 years. That's well over 1,000 years. It's almost 1,600 years, right? So when we say Aristotelian philosophy, we don't just mean Aristotle. We mean Aristotle and all those that came afterwards, including Arabic philosophers, as we'll see in a moment, because the Rambam knew Aristotle through the Arabic philosophers who actually preserved that school of wisdom throughout the Dark Ages, when Europe was immersed in the Dark Ages. It was the Arabic philosophers that preserved that tradition of learning. So the Rambam says, also from philosophical works, Hakdumim v'Hachadashim, the ancient and the modern. For the Rambam, the modern means, you know, the year 1000, the year 1100. U'mechiburei harbei b'nei adam. V'shama u'shma ha'emet mimi sha'amra. The four of the most important, four of the most well-known words of the Rambam. And we should hear the truth from he who says it. U'shma ha'emet mimi sha'amra. Accept the truth from wherever it comes. This is, of course, look, the Rambam's number one motto is, of course, Yesod HaYesodot V'Amud HaChachamot Leda She'esham Eloka. The opening words of the Mishneh Torah, the Yesod HaYesodot V'Amud HaChachamot, the foundation of all foundations and the pillar of wisdom, is to know that there is a God. But on the flip side of his business card, we might print this: Shema Emet Mimi Sha'amra. Accept the truth from whence it comes. And this is the Rambam. Everybody likes to. I'm not sure whether it was Rabbi Twersky or if it was someone else. There's a well-known chestnut, a well-known turn of phrase. When it comes to the Rambam, you know, whenever you talk about the great giant titans of the Jewish world, everyone wants to claim them for themselves. Everybody wants the Rambam to be on their team. No matter what your orientation, no matter what your where you stand on the spectrum of things, everybody wants the Rambam on their team. Everyone wants to claim the Rambam. So that we can't talk about Maimonides. There's Maimonides and there's Yormonides, right? Everybody likes to think that they have the Rambam. And this is one of the things about which certainly people on the more rightward end of the spectrum are uncomfortable with the Rambam. The Rambam's acceptance of the truth from whomever spoke it. Here, the person who speaks it is probably a philosopher by the name of Al-Farabi, a Muslim philosopher, scientist, poet. If you Google him, you'll find plenty of information. There's a Wikipedia entry on him. He lives in the 10th century, end of the 9th to the middle of the 10th century. He writes many things, again, poetry, philosophy, political philosophy, all different types of things. He himself is, of course, in the school of, again, Aristotelian philosophy. And he writes a work called The Aphorisms of the Statesman, or The Chapters of the Statesman, which, if you look at it, it reads, there's a significant overlap with what the Rambam is discussing in the Shmona Prakim, and the Rambam himself quotes liberally from this work by Al-Farabi, who's channeling certain Aristotelian ideas. Again, 3 seconds of Googling and you'll get more information than you want to know. So the Rambam now says, Efshar she'avi lefamim memrash lema shehi lashon sefer mifursam. So the Rambam says, it could be that I'm going to quote from time to time material from other books, other even well-known books. V'ein b'chol zera. And there's nothing wrong with this. V'eini mitpa'er b'mash amru mi. Let me turn the page. V'eni mitpa'er b'ma she'amru mi she'kadam. And I'm not, he says, I'm not taking credit for what somebody else said. L'fi she'ani kfar hodeti b'zeh, So here's the interesting rub. The Rambam says, I'm going to quote from all different sources, including some general philosophy, but I'm not going to give you footnotes. I'm not going to quote my sources. I'm not going to say Aristotle said this, or El-Farabi said that, or Rabbi Akiva said this, or Rabbi Yehoshua said that, because I'm telling you up front that I'm going to be quoting liberally from other places. Now, this is not the whole notion, the modern notion of plagiarism and the scholarly mechanisms that we have, where everybody has to, you have to quote all of your sources. Those are modern notions. In the ancient world, in the medieval world, we did not have this idea that you had to cite all of your sources. It wasn't considered intellectually. It wasn't considered, intellectual theft or things like that. But the Rambam says, "I'm telling you up front that I'm going to be quoting." I'm going to be quoting from all types of other sources, and I'm telling you up front that that's what I'm doing, without having to tell you so and so said this and so said that, because that's unnecessary. Adam asks how much the Rambam actually does rely on Jewish sources in the body of the Shemona Prakim. I don't know. I saw in the scholarly world that does deal with these questions of trying to unravel and track down every source, that it could be that around 5% of the Shemona Prakim is lifted from Al-Farabi. I'll take that for granted that's a correct guesstimate. But more important than how many than doing a word count. I remember when I was in middle school or in high school when they taught us how to do term papers. I remember there being some rule of thumb of how many words you could quote without it being plagiarism. I'm told by friends that teach in high schools still that in the world of the internet, it's a whole different ballgame of how citation works and how plagiarism works and etc. But I don't remember what it was. It was a certain number of words that you couldn't quote without it being plagiarism, or how many words you could quote without having to put it in quotation marks or something like that. But even if 5% of the Shemona Prakim are word-for-word quotes from Al-Farabi, the larger question is what percentage of it is influenced by a particular way of looking at things. That's the more interesting question. So then the Rambam says, the first reason I don't cite all my sources is because it's not necessary. And interestingly, in the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam also doesn't cite his sources. In his halachic work, he also doesn't cite his sources. And that was one of the great critiques on the Mishneh Torah. But now he says, Efshar lefamim sheshem ha'ish hahu yachnis b'lev mi she'en tfuna bo. Shezeh ha'davar nifsad v'yesh bo toch ra shelo yede'ehu. Mipnei ze ra'iti shelo lizkor ha'omer ho'il v'kavanati shetusag ha'toelet l'korei v'shenivar lo ha'inyanim ha'tzfunim b'zot ha'mesechta. So the Rambam says, and I also don't tell you where I got everything, because sometimes, if I tell you all of my sources, the Rambam was aware that not everybody was meant to be reading Al-Farabi, not everybody was meant to be reading Aristotle. And it could be that certain things will get stuck in your head and you're going to mix up the toch and the chutz, the content and the form. And that's not worthwhile, and I'm not interested in leading you astray in that way, so therefore I'm not giving you all of my footnotes. No, Tehillelei, I don't think that's true. Tehillelei suggests that everybody would have known it anyway. I don't think that's true. I don't think the Rambam assumed that that everybody knew it anyway. And then he says, now we're going to get into it. And that this was all by way of introduction. So just for us, by way of introduction, just to give you a quick overview of what's discussed in the eight chapters. Interestingly, the Rambam, although he didn't call the work the Shmona Prakim, he called it the introduction to his commentary on Masechet Avot. He does give each of the chapters a title. He does give each of the chapters a title, which I think is the only place that he does that. He doesn't do that in the Mishnah Torah, in the Mor Nevuchim. The Mor Nevuchim, the chapters don't have titles, but here they do. So the work begins with a discussion, a kind of dissection, in anatomy of the soul. Now, by soul, the Rambam was not, you know, like one of these neo-Hasidic hippies. Let's be clear on that. By soul, he means the force within us that both animates us and gives us the ability to reason. And this is what we'll start with next week. He does this dissection, as it were, of the components of the human soul into five different pieces, and he describes them as moral powers, leading to the makeup of the intellect, of who we are. Because for the Rambam, the intellect becomes almost the very definition of what it means to be human. We'll get into this next week. The second chapter deals with larger questions of, since we are given the soul that has the potential to perfect one's personality and intellect, but nevertheless, a lot of times we get it wrong. So how could it be that we disobey? How could it be that we cause deficiencies in our soul? And a larger discussion of virtue and vice. This leads him to the third chapter, which deals with diseases of the soul. Now, again, remember the Rambam was a physician, but he also lives in a time, a little bit we've come back to this. Modern medicine has, I wouldn't say come full circle, but a little bit he's come back to this. The Rambam thinks that if a person has personality flaws, that means that there's an illness in his soul. And therefore, if you're ill, you need to, just like if you had a cold or a fever, you would go to a physician. So there are physicians for illnesses and distempers of the soul. And those are chachamim. Because chokhmah, wisdom is an indication of a healthy soul. Is an indication of a healthy soul. The fourth is a kind of what's that book the psychologists use, the DSM, the DS, you know, like the diagnostic statistical manual. What's it called? Somebody help me out. The DSM-4, right? Well, that's now, isn't there a fifth one? I think the fifth one just came out. And this is the Rambam's discussion of how to repair illnesses of the soul. And here he talks about his famous treatment of the golden mean, of finding the middle, of finding the Shvil HaZahav, the middle path between extremes. And it's a recipe, as it were, it's a prescription, as it were, for how to perfect one's personality flaws. In this discussion, in the fourth chapter, there are two asides that fit in very much. One is his attack on asceticism, his notion that Judaism does not believe this very strong notion that Judaism does not believe in asceticism, in depriving oneself of worldly pleasures. On the contrary, Judaism believes very much in engaging with the world and in enjoying the world. We're not Catholics, but everything has to be enjoyed in moderation. And for the Rambam, moderation becomes the watchword for this kind of work on one's soul. And then, as piggyback to that, is a discussion of what was Moshe's sin. You know, Moshe hits the rock. In Parshat Chukat, Moshe hits the rock, and everybody tries to figure out, like, what exactly did Moshe do wrong. For the Rambam, the problem is that Moshe got angry, and the Rambam here has a side discussion of Moshe Rabbeinu. The fifth chapter has to do with kind of painting the idea that knowledge of God is the goal to which we're striving. The sixth chapter deals with a discussion of virtue versus self-control. What's better? Is it better not to want to do what's wrong, or to desire to do something but to not do it because you have self-control? That's a weighty philosophical discussion. The seventh has to do with removing the veils, removing the mechitzot, breaking down the dividers to prophecy. And the picture of the prophet as prophecy as the function of having achieved human perfection, that if we perfect ourselves, if we pull away all of these mechitzot, all of these veils, all of these blockages that are outgrowths of the flaws in our personality, so then we'll open ourselves up. The plumbing will just be clear, and the prophecy will flow. And then, finally, the eighth chapter has to do with a discussion of man's disposition, his who he is by nature, the discussion of free will and the evil inclination, and then the larger, weighty philosophical discussion of yidi'ah and bechirah. If God knows what we will do, since he knows everything, how then do we have free will? If he knows what I'm going to do, since he's all-knowing, then how can we say that I have free will? These are all topics that the Rambam later discusses elsewhere. Yes, actually, interestingly, about nature versus nurture, that's a topic we've discussed in the past. The Rambam does get into that. These are all topics the Rambam later revisits elsewhere, certainly in the Mor Nevuchim, but even in the Mishneh Torah, in the philosophical components of the Mishneh Torah. And the most important parallel text to the Shmona Prakim is the Rambam's Hilchot Deot, which we will be making reference to. I uploaded to the Shir's homepage the full text of Hilchot Deot. There's an English translation of Hilchot Deot at this website, which is just the link to the Chabad website. The entire Mishneh Torah in English translation is now available online at the Chabad website. If you go to this link, you'll find it, or at least Hilchot Deot, and from there, from the menu, you can get back to the entire Mishneh Torah of the Rambam in English translation. Anyway, I've uploaded the Hebrew text because we'll be referring to it multiple times. For the Rambam, Hilchot Deot. Deot are opinions. You know, like in the newspaper here in Israel, the op-ed page, the opinion page, is called Deot, because they're opinions. They're not reporting fact. They're people giving opinion, as if the journalistic fact side is not giving opinions, but at least it pretends to aspire to objectivity. Deot for the Rambam means opinions, not like opinions like, you know, I like corn on my pizza and somebody else likes mushrooms, but opinions meaning
inclinations of the mind, opinions in the way that we talk about personality traits. What in conventional parlance we sometimes talk about as midot or midos. You know, like if somebody, talks about somebody, says, do they have nice midos? Do they have nice midot? Like, meaning, are they a nice person? Do they have nice personality traits? So for the Rambam, that's what he calls deot. That's what he calls deot, because for the Rambam, the intellect and the personality are inextricably linked. So the Rambam chooses a term which is indicative of that. And that is an important point to keep in mind throughout the whole discussion in the Shmona Prokem. So we'll be coming back to this as we move along. Next week we'll look at the beginning of the first chapter, or as much as we can of the first chapter of the Shmona Prokem, and then we'll go along. I'm going to put up into the... You all got an email from me, so you have my email. I have a bunch of different email addresses, but it doesn't matter. They all come to me. But I just put up into the... No, I did not. I did it in gibberish. I'll put up in the chat right now my email address, so you can be in touch with me during the week if you have any questions. And we will meet again next Thursday night. I'll stay on line if anybody has any questions.